Asegúrese de que resuelvan, ahora que pueden, su dominio del inglés. Es importante quitar este problema de en medio ahora, antes de que entren en el mercado laboral. Si no, lo más probable es que nunca lo resuelvan.
Sí, sí, ya lo solucionaré. Decimos eso constantemente. Llámenos 911-33-5833. 911-33-5833.
Con nuestro MIP, nuestro Máster en Inglés Profesional, resolverás de por vida tu preocupación por el inglés. Podrás desenvolverte sin problemas. Quita de en medio el inglés ahora, en cuanto puedas. El Máster en Inglés Profesional de Vaughan.
Haz una pausa y disfruta. Mejorando. Aprendiendo con tu curso trimestral por videoconferencia. Con todo el dinamismo e intensidad de una clase Vaughan en una plataforma rápida y de fácil instalación. Por fin llega tu mejor momento del día. Cursos trimestrales por videoconferencia. Haz tu reserva en el 911-133-5833. 911-133-5833. Ahora más oportunidades de aprender inglés donde y cuando quieras mediante un formato mixto y por teléfono. Clases telefónicas Vaughan. Combina conversaciones fluidas junto con las correcciones propias del método Vaughan, cuya naturaleza dinámica y 100% interactiva lo convierten en la mejor opción para este formato de clase. Recuerda que el signo distintivo de nuestras clases es la calidad del profesor. En Vaughan no es suficiente con un alto nivel de inglés. Nuestro estándar es la excelencia. Todos nuestros profesores son nativos y atraviesan un riguroso proceso de formación en clases telefónicas. Clases telefónicas de Vaughan. Ahora donde quieras, cuando quieras, pero con Vaughan. Llama al 911-133-5833. 911-133-5833 para Madrid o llama al 933398687 933398687 para Barcelona.
Por menos de 30 céntimos al día, tu curso de inglés online de Vaughan. Pruébalo durante 2 semanas y si no te gusta, te devolvemos el dinero. Entra a nuestra web cursodeinglesonlinevaughan.com e infórmate. Quédate en casa.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Western Civilization, from Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. I'm your host, my name is Guy Williams, and on this program I'm going to talk about some of the very first people to go from England to the New World, to North America. These will be the pilgrims, that's what they called themselves, peregrinos. They wanted to establish a completely different place, a different way of life, far, far beyond the contaminating influences of the old world. Now, this was during the 17th century. The 17th century was the big century for the establishment of the nation state, right? A state which is also considered a nation. This idea of nation, the idea of nation is very uncomfortable with multiplicity or plurality within its borders. Nation wants uniformity. Nation doesn't like people having more than one religion or more than one language. That's not what nationhood is all about, right? That is why the whole concept of nation is so absurd in our times. My favorite example is the during the first Spanish Republic, right? In the 1870s, the 1870, 1860, 69, 70, when everybody started calling themselves Nación in Spain, and there was one, the La Nación de Jumilla. There was a diplomatic sort of letter, the La Nación de Jumilla a La Nación de Murcia. And they wanted cordial relations. And La Nación de Murcia, by the way,
that had the access, of course, to the Navy, right? They sent a warship to bombard La Nación de Valencia, right? Once you start talking about naciones, where do you finish? I believe the entire, every time I hear that word, I want to laugh. In any case, nationhood in England. Now, you begin by expelling minorities, right? James I became King of England and wanted to enforce the obedience to a single church, the established church, the Anglican Church. One doctrine, one discipline, one religion. Right? Almost immediately, the Catholics who had believed that James I was going to be completely different and would end the systematic discrimination that they had been forced to endure, to put up with, to stand. There was a horrendous terrorist attempt on the part of the Catholics to blow up the Parliament, to explode the Parliament building. If it had been successful, then half of London could have exploded, gone up in the air. The people who informed on this plot, called the Gunpowder Plot, Gunpowder Polvorin, the Gunpowder Plot, because gunpowder was being stored in the basement of the Parliament building. Typically English, they rented the basement of the Parliament building for storage. You know, that way it would pay for itself. In any case, the plot did not happen. The instigator of the plot, a man named Guy Fawkes, he was caught, he was killed. That's why the name Guy, my name, became so terribly, terribly unpopular for 4 centuries. There were very, very few people named Guy. It would be like naming a child after Adolf Hitler, something like that. You cannot call your child Adolf in Germany or France today. It's illegal. This is what happened to the name Guy in England at that time because of Guy Fawkes. To this day, in November, early November, there is a celebration, fireworks, and you take un pelele, right, like a dummy called the Guy, and you do all sorts of things to it. Probably this is the origin of the idea of Guy, this pelele, Guy as a fellow, a bloke, a chap, un tío, un tipo, right? Hey, guys! That is probably from the dummy, the pelele, in Guy Fawkes Night. In any case, this horrendous act was met with repression, systematic repression. It meant that Catholics in England were second-class citizens until the 19th century. But not just the Catholics, all of the people who did not want to participate in the established church. They were not allowed to go to the university. They were not allowed to participate in civic organizations or become part of the bureaucracy. And so many of these dissenters, as they were called, many of these other Protestant denominations, they went into commerce, which was probably better in the long run. Right? The entrepreneurial spirit. In any case, what about the Puritans? Well, initially, the Anglican Church itself was not Lutheran. It was not Calvinist. It was just Henry VIII who didn't want Rome to dictate policy to the Church of England. And so it came very close to Catholicism in many of its beliefs. But very soon, these new ideas reached people and influenced people. And so you had a Puritan movement within the established church, within Anglicanism, trying to purify what was going on. And this is what Puritan is about. Now, the king, James I, and especially his son, Charles I, they did not want anything to do with this movement, and of course they did believe in the divine right of kings. They were ruling because of God's will. He says, I will govern according to the commonwealth and not according to the common will. Right. And not allowing himself la voluntad del poblacho, right? He said that the Puritans were not going to have any influence. Some of the Puritans, believing that they had the right to break away from the established church. Remember that if you didn't marry in the Anglican church, you were not legally married. If you didn't pay taxes, right? If you didn't go to church on Sunday, your name was recorded and, you were treated as, again, a second-class citizen. However, some of the Puritans did try to get away, tried to break away. In one of these places, in a place called Scrooby, there was a certain William Brewster who was going to found the Plymouth colony in Massachusetts, a nonconformist. And rather than trying to reform the church from inside, he wants to separate. He thinks that the church is so corrupt that it is beyond saving. There is no salvation for the established church. So, nonconformists is one thing, but separatist is another. And, of course, this is punishable by law. Everyone went to these clandestine meetings, including William Bradford, only 17 years old at the time that he joined the congregation in Scrooby. Scrooby is going to be the nucleus that forms the first attempt to go to Plymouth, to go to Massachusetts. Some of the Puritans were arrested and put into prison. Others had their houses scrutinized, watched day and night. Others were threatened. The king and his agents had these people living in a situation of terror. Or at least this is what comes down to us. They say that is the reason they decided to leave the country. Now, the king, of course, would not let them. That's not what nation is all about. Nation is forcing people to conform. And the king's officers were told to arrest any people who attempted to leave. So all of this had to be done in great secrecy. A large company of Puritans hired a ship for themselves, for their flight, huida, right, to flee huir, flee, fled, fled, and huida is flight. So they were getting ready to flee and paid their money. And naturally, what do you think happened next? The captain betrayed them and turned them in to the king's officers. They were put into boats. Their possessions were confiscated. Any money that they were carrying was confiscated, which meant that that their clothing was torn to see if there was any money hidden there, and their books and papers were taken away. The entire company was sent back into town, and most of them were put into prison. However, they refused to give up at that point. They refused to conform. This time, they made an agreement with a Dutch captain, and the Dutch captain was going to take them to Holland. He was going to take them to a new world, a new place, near Leiden, right? Leiden, not so far from La Haya, no? Den Haag, The Hague in English. Leiden, the great university city there in the Netherlands, in Holland itself. They were going to live near Leiden, and they made this pact with the Dutch sea captain in order to do it. Now, the women and children were sent separately, and they were all going to go together, meet at the ship, and then cross over the English Channel and start their new life. However, the women and children in their boats were supposed to wait until night. As they waited, the tide went out, right? La marea. And in the low tide, their boats got stuck, trapped in the mud. So the women and children were stranded. There was no way that they could go out, no way to reach them. And until the tide rose and the boats began to float, and meanwhile, the ship is ready. The men were already there. One of the ship's boats was sent for the women, but the men decided to board. And just as they were on board, armed body of king's men were seen coming across the field. The Dutch captain, who was there as, a foreign ship and a subject to who knows what kind of laws. He simply put up his sails, raised the anchor, and sailed away. So you can imagine, these men were in despair over having to leave their families. The captain refused to go back because, naturally, what he was doing was clandestine, entirely clandestine. His own government didn't know about this. And he did not want to be responsible for the diplomatic incident that this clandestine activity would undoubtedly provoke. Now, because of this tenacity, I suppose, on the part of the pilgrims, you have to distinguish between Puritans who want to reform the church and pilgrims who are dissenters and separatists who do not believe in the Anglican Church anymore. So yes, these pilgrims are determined to leave. And finally the king says, if they want to go, they can go. So the women and children, in the end, as many people as wanted to, were allowed to join their people in Holland. And for 3 years, this community thrived. My own ancestor, Mr. Cook, he met his wife in Holland. And so, yes, one of my ancestors, an English pilgrim, and his wife, a Dutch woman, who decided to become a pilgrim as well. They lived in Holland, but it was very difficult for them to live a pure life in such a happy country. They wanted to be austere, and the Dutch are not austere by nature. The older people saw how the young people were quickly becoming more Dutch than the Dutch. And they believed that, especially on Sundays when younger people wanted to play, and they were in more danger in Holland than they had been in England. Therefore, they decided to go to the New World. Put an ocean between them and the old world. The Speedwell. The Speedwell was in Holland. The Speedwell, one ship they hired. The other one was in England. It was called the Mayflower. Well, Flor de Mayo. The Mayflower. The two ships started out together, but unfortunately the Speedwell began to take on water, and they could not bail it, achicar. They couldn't bail out the water in time. It had to go back into harbor. So about 120 of these pilgrims went aboard the Mayflower and zarparon. They set sail for England. Now, if you look at the professions of these original pilgrims, you will see all sorts of things that have absolutely nothing to do with agriculture. These people knew absolutely nothing about farming. Once they got to the New World, they were entirely lost. And they had very little leadership. The fact is that the world back then was in the middle of a mini ice age. And so the temperatures were much, much colder than they are today. And their winter was catastrophic for them. Half of them died the first winter. The only reason that they were able to survive was in part because the Indians were there. Massasoit, I'll be talking about him in the second part of the program, but the Indians were there to help them. They were very, very lucky with their first contacts in the Indians. And they had practically a guardian angel in the form of a man named Miles Standish. Miles Standish was an English soldier, he had been sort of a mercenary. He had been there. He had been fighting the Spanish in Holland, working for Dutch independence, right? The northern part of the Dutch colonies. They did not want to be a member of the Habsburg Empire anymore. And so this generated a war that lasted for 80 years. But Standish had been fighting in that war, and fighting was his business and his pleasure. Now, he resolved to help the Puritans. He resolved, although he was not one himself, he resolved to cross with them and stand by them. So, as I say, a guardian angel. For 9 weeks, the Mayflower battled against the wind and waves. It was not a happy crossing. It was a long voyage, and many people lost courage. However, Standish was there, in the worst weather, on deck, helping the sailors. He had a cheerful voice, and he was a born leader. He knew how to encourage people, how to cheer people up. And when the ship reached Cape Cod, right, El Cabo del Bacalao, Cape Cod, in what is today Massachusetts, Standish and a few followers went on shore. They saw about 5 or 6 Indians with a dog coming toward them. However, the Indians ran into the woods. Now, Standish ran after the Indians, but the Indians were faster, naturally. They had the advantage of knowing the terrain. Standish spent the night there. The next day they found sand, mounds of sand that looked like graves. They dug into these graves, tumbas, and found bows and arrows. But they said, what are we doing? This is desecration. And they buried them again. Now the, again, Massasoit, the Indian king, he knew that they had desecrated these graves. He saw them burying them up. Maybe this is why he was more compassionate toward them. In any case, well, I have to take a break. I'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Todos pueden decir que llevan más de 40 años de experiencia formando a la mayor parte de los directivos, empresarios, trabajadores de este país. Presumimos, pero es que es cierto. Trabajamos con los mejores docentes. Tu profesor está aquí. Infórmate en el 91-133-5833. 91-133-5833. En Vaughan buscamos soluciones. Vaughan in Company. Rentabilidad, dinamismo, resultados. Lo que más miedo da al profesional español es hablar por teléfono en inglés. Por eso Vaughan ha desarrollado las clases telefónicas, en las que trabajarás tanto tu comprensión auditiva como tu fluidez oral con un auténtico crack de la enseñanza. Tú eliges la hora y la temática de cada clase. Flexibilidad absoluta. Calidad Vaughan 100%. Contrata las clases telefónicas de inglés de Vaughan para tu empresa. Llama al 911-335-831 o entra en grupovaughan.com.
Si tus hijos siguen en el lado oscuro del idioma, ya va siendo hora de usar
La fuerza. La fuerza de voluntad que tengo que tener para no darte un sablazo por dejarlo todo para el último momento. Ven a Disney English Vaughan. Todo el poder del Club Junior con la magia y la fuerza de Disney. No dejes pasar esta oportunidad. Locke. Antonio, Paco, Manolo, Luis, Ricardo. Tomad nota del teléfono. 911-33-5832. 911-33-5832.
Mucha gente nos pregunta si es posible que un método online para aprender inglés funcione de verdad. Hoy en nuestro especial Vaughan Key Points hablamos de este tema con nuestro profesor y director de innovación, Richard Brown.
La clave de nuestro método online es la motivación. Hemos diseñado un curso que realmente engancha en cada nivel, te motiva y reta para que avances de nivel. Pero la verdadera clave son los profesores Vaughan. Su método de enseñanza es lo que realmente nos diferencia. Los cursos online Vaughan cuentan con los mismos profesores apasionados que desde hace más de 40 años nos han hecho diferentes. Descubre las ventajas de nuestro método online probándolo. Así que os invito a entrar en grupovaughan.com y poneros a prueba.
Antes de inglés para ligar.
Pero qué chico tan mono. Voy a decirle algo. Hola. Me gusta mucho tu barba.
Hey, sorry, I don't understand a word you're saying.
¿Qué es Giri? Jo, con lo guapo que es.
Después de inglés para ligar.
Excuse me, is this seat taken? Can I...
Sure.
Wow, nice beard. I like your style, dude.
Thanks, I'm Mike, you are...
What a cool girl. And her English is amazing.
En Vaughan pensamos en todo. Por eso, y por petición popular, lanzamos nuestro libro Inglés para ligar y todo lo que viene después. No tenemos que explicarte de qué va, ¿verdad? Descubre todo el inglés que necesitas para encontrar el amor o lo que sea que estás buscando. Incluye una sección de inglés no apto para menores. Inglés para ligar y todo lo que viene después. Consíguelo ya en cualquiera de nuestras tiendas Vaughan o en vaughantienda.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Western Civilization. From Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. I'm your host. My name is Guy Williams. And on the first part of the program, I was talking about the pilgrims, peregrinos, the pilgrims who went from England to Holland and then decided that the best course of action would be to go from Holland to the New World, to found a colony there where they could live a Puritan lifestyle uncontaminated by differences of opinion or the way other people lived. Now, this was an important, a monumentous decision. They did want to set an example for the rest of the world. But at the same time, it meant that they were going to radically change their lifestyle. They were going to have to adapt in so many different ways. And so, here they were, exploring. They saw that many of the Indian villages that they came across were old and deteriorated, and that much of the food there was rotting, right? Pudriendo, say, because of the devastation of disease. There had been pestilence, there had been plague, and an enormous portion, we'll never know how much, but an enormous portion of the native population was now gone. And this meant, of course, that things were going to have to change. Some tribes had been eliminated, other tribes were becoming stronger. There was a power vacuum. And with the addition of Europeans into the mix, this was going to be, it was going to be very problematic in the near future. We will see. But, as I say, initially, they were very, very lucky. They were able to build houses of logs and, wooden houses, you know, troncos, basically, with mud in between and paper instead of glass in the windows. As I say, this was a mini ice age. The water on the ocean froze, and it hasn't done that for centuries, right? But that year, the ocean froze. The snow fell so heavily that some people were trapped inside their houses in the middle of winter. This was devastating. By the end of the winter, by the end of the first winter, only about 50 people were left. Only about 50 survived that first winter. For fear that the Indians would discover how few they were, they buried most of the people who, you know, who had died. They buried them clandestinely and planted fields over their graves so the Indians would not know how devastating that winter had been. Now, the local chief, a man named Massasoit, was interested in them. He was curious about them. And he welcomed them. Just recently, a descendant of Massasoit said that was his big mistake. He never should have done that. He was too good-hearted. It was the wrong thing to do, from a historical perspective. And, as we will see on a later program, Massasoit's son, they called him Joseph, who had grown up Anglified, right, who spoke and wrote perfect English. Joseph is going to go to war against the English. But Massasoit welcomed them. And a certain Indian named Squanto also helped them, teaching them how to plant corn, maize, right? Corn, until that time, corn was any cereal. And today, in English, corn can mean cereal, right? Cereal, grains of any kind. So yes, corn a synonym for cereal. However, once the pilgrims had arrived there and seen the maize, as the Indians were growing it, they used the word corn for that. And so today, certainly in the United States, corn is maize. Sometimes, yes, in England, you can hear maize used for maize. Not very common there, but for us in the United States, corn is ubiquitous. You find it everywhere. It is very well loved, and that is the word we use. The old word for cereal, corn. Now, you plant the corn at a certain time of year. You plant the corn when the oak leaf is as big as the ear of a mouse, right? When you plant corn, you put in a herring, right? Un arenque. You put a herring in next to every plant to use that for fertilizer. Squanto was enormously helpful. Squanto had been kidnapped. He had been taken to England. He had been exhibited. He knew London, right? Many of these Englishmen had never been to London, but Squanto knew London. He had been there for years. And finally, he had convinced a ship's captain to take him back. And there he was. His people had all died. And so, really, the only people he really knew, the only people he could relate to, were these Englishmen, newcomers. So, he was the one who told the local Indians that the Europeans, the Englishmen, kept disease in their houses and could use those diseases like weapons whenever they wanted to. Just like, for example, the gunpowder, right? Polvorin or bullets. He was able to save the colony more than once from destruction at the hands of unfriendly natives. At one point, Miles Standish had gone to buy corn from a tribe of Indians down the coast. There was a plot to kill him, or at least this is what he says. They were going to wait until he was asleep and kill him in his sleep. Well, he decided that he would not go to sleep. When they saw this, the Indians said, "Well, why don't you go to sleep?" And he said, "I have no desire to." And in the morning, he left the house and went back to his boat. This is the kind of serious misunderstanding, because the question of the Indian, the suspicion of Standish, was this actually a conspiracy? Was it a plot, the way Standish described it later? Or was it simply a misunderstanding? Hospitality on the part of the Indians, giving him a place to sleep. Now, we will never know, in part because Squanto was not there with him to translate. And of course, Squanto, who knows, might have translated to his own benefit, because later on he is going to become extremely unpopular with both the English and the Indians, because he systematically mistranslates in order to enhance, right, potenciar, to enhance his own value to the colony. At another point, a hostile tribe formed a plot to eliminate the English, and Massasoit sent word to the colonists that in order to save their lives, they must kill the chief of that tribe. And there he was. He said he was sharpening his knife, right? Afilando. And so, as he sharpened his knife, he said, "My knife will eat, but it will not speak." Then he looked at Miles Standish and said, "You are a great captain, but you are a little man. I am not a chief, but I am very strong." To me, this is very ambiguous. enigmatic. I mean, it needs further interpretation. In any case, Standish decided that this was intolerable and fell on the man and killed him. They say he died astonished, and that they began to kill the other people around them who ran away into the woods. And from that moment on, the Indians lived in terror at Miles Standish. Now, again, I ask myself whether this is the result of a misunderstanding. At this point, there were about 20 different tribes around, most of them speaking languages that were mutually intelligible, so that the communication was not an issue, right? If you learned one of the Indian languages, you could make yourself understood to any of the others. So, although these tribes, as I say, some of them had died out in the plague, others had come in to fill the gap, right? There was a power vacuum, and so many of them were fighting with each other. The sachem is a word that was later used in American politics, a little bit like a cacique. Cacique from the Caribbean tribes, right? As soon as Christopher Columbus was there in the Caribbean, he talked about meeting caciques, and a cacique later on had a political meaning in Spanish, in standard Spanish, cacique meaning a political boss, especially in the 19th century when you had corrupt politics. Well, sachem is going to have the same meaning in the United States, especially on the East Coast in the 19th century, when you talked about corrupt politics, there would be sachems involved. Well, in any case, the Narragansett Indians had a sachem called Canonicus. And Canonicus sent the pilgrims a group of arrows wrapped in the skin of a rattlesnake, right? A venomous snake. So, yes, the serpiente cascabel. They decided to send the same skin back, but this time with gunpowder in it. And this defiance was enough. The Narragansetts stayed neutral. In the future, because of this exchange, nothing was really going to happen with them. The fact is, again, this seems to be so ambiguous to me. How was this interpreted? Was it clear? In any case, as I say, Massasoit, the Wampanoag, the local sachem, kept paying visits to the pilgrims and was received with ceremony. And they described him as a lusty man, lusty meaning lusty today, of course, would be lujurioso. Lust is lujuria. But back then, a lust would be vitality. So full of vitality, in his best years, with an able body, grave of countenance, meaning with a very serious face. His face was painted a sad red. I wonder what they call a sad red. In any case, his face and head were oiled so that he looked greasy. a great chain of white bone was around his neck, and there was a little bag of tobacco. He used the tobacco himself and passed it to the English. He loved our trumpet and marveled much at our trumpet. His men tried to sound it as well as they could. Some of them were naked, all of them were painted. All were tall and strong. And as I say, this was the beginning of a beautiful friendship, the friendship that was going to last the better part of 40 years. But as I say, Massasoit's son, Philip, was going to change things entirely. King Philip's War would be devastating, devastating for the original, for the pioneers. Everybody lost somebody in King Philip's War. Proportionally, the devastation of King Philip's War was enormous, larger than any war subsequently. And when it was time for the governor of the colony to reciprocate the visit and go to Massasoit's place, they said, well, he had no food with him, so that with night coming, they went to bed without supper. They had no dinner. The only furniture consisted of boards, like tablas, a foot from the ground, with a thin mat, como una estera, on top of them. The chief and his wife were at one end, and we were at the other. Two of his men, there was no room, lay down on top of us so that when we got up in the morning, we were more tired than when we had gone to bed. With the savages' barbarous singing, because they never stopped singing during the night, said they sang themselves to sleep. And the vermin, alimañas, within, and mosquitoes, we could not sleep. So we departed. Massasoit was both sorry and ashamed that he could not entertain us better. I'm getting the feeling that this visit was spontaneous rather than organized. In any case, one of the things that the Indians did do there and further south, I remember, well, in Virginia, for example. Virginia, you can go and visit a recreation. Well, also in Massachusetts, you can visit a recreation of Plymouth Plantation. It's there on Cape Cod. You have people who perform. They are there doing things that the original members of the colony would have done, right? Planting and cooking and any task around the house that needs doing, they are there doing it. And while they do it, they are happy to talk to everyone. Each of these people are in a specific role. So day after day, they are playing these people. This is a performance. And again, thousands of people come over the course of the year, school groups and so forth, to see how the original pilgrims lived. Now, you can see a recreation, and by the way, there are Indians of the Wampoag, the tribe of Massasoit, are also there to show you how they used to live. Now, further south, there is something similar, not nearly as elaborate, but similar, in the original colonial Jamestown in Virginia, not so far from the capital of Virginia, Richmond. And there, you can see how the Indians lived in a, let's call it a chotha, a hut, large, with a fire burning. And the fire was burning constantly. This fire deliberately creates a lot of smoke. And the smoke is there in the middle. It's very hard to breathe. You're breathing in pure smoke. The smoke is incompatible with mosquitoes. Mosquitoes cannot go anywhere near that smoke. In other words, to get out of the malarial, pestilential area and to have some kind of hygiene, you need to be in that smoke. The smoke covers the walls. It covers the food. It acts as a preservative and a disinfectant. So, yes, everything within the hut is covered with a very, very thick layer of black smoke. The fire is burning constantly, and there is no chimney or other way for the smoke to escape. So just as in the case of, for example, Hernán Cortés, who would not have survived for long without the help of allies, the Otomis, the Tlaxcalans, they say that Cortés was there. It was not the Spaniards fighting the